Welcome to Theatre Voice, Tanika Gupta. Thank you very much for talking to us. Your show, Great Expectations, just opened at Watford Palace Theatre and is going to be touring until May. How did this come about?
It was actually a commission from Watford Palace Theatre about 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
And so I wrote it, and I think the first draft was sent in 2008.
Oh, right.
So it was always going to happen, but it was as to when it was going to happen is... But it was actually my idea, and I went to the Watford Palace Theatre with the idea that I wanted to transpose Great Expectations to India. And they said yes, so that's how it came about.
You've worked with Watford before, of course, because you did The Country Wife with them,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, I did an adaptation quite a few years ago, and that was under a different artistic director, Lawrence Till.
I see, and who's the artistic director now?
Bridget Lama.
Right.
Yeah, I think she's been there for a few years now.
And so once you went to them with the idea and they accepted it and you wrote it, were you kind of then involved in working out who would direct the show and the casting and all the other kind of...
Originally I went with a different director attached, so it was a sort of project that both myself and Indu Rupasingham were going to do together. Mm-hmm. And then Indu got very busy and had to move on. So at the point at which they decided to produce it, I then had to go back and find a new director. So I was very much involved in that alongside Watford Palace and ETT, English Touring Theatre. So together we kind of interviewed quite a few directors to find the perfect one.
Who is Nikolai?
Who is Nikolai Foster, yes, yes.
Right.
And it's been a fantastic collaboration. I've really enjoyed it.
So let's just talk about the process of the transposition. You said you went to them with an idea that you wanted to put Great Expectations in India.
Yeah.
But when you got round to actually doing the physical transposing of the book into a play and setting it in India, what are the kind of things that you had to consider as a writer to keep, to remove?
Do you know what? It's very hard to actually explain exactly how you do it. You sort of just sit there and... I mean, I always loved the book Great Expectations, and I knew that what I wanted to do, first and foremost, was tell the story from Pip's point of view. I mean, it is a book about a young boy who goes from rags to riches and then rags again.
Yes.
And so he is the main protagonist that goes all the way through. So the main thing was to make sure that it was his story and his journey. In terms of making him an Indian boy... originally I thought of setting it in India and then him coming to London, but actually in the book what happens is that Pip goes backwards and forwards from the village to the city quite a few times, and when I thought about it, I thought, well, actually it's not physically possible to keep jumping up and down from India to London.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact in the end I decided just to keep it all in India, and of course, as ever with all my stuff, I didn't particularly just want to make it just Indian. So I wanted to make sure that there were different cultures within that, and to look at the Raj and to look at the English there. And what's lovely about the book is that when he goes to London in the original, he meets all these incredible characters like Jack as the lawyer and Wemmick the lawyer's assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed perfect to me that they should be English. But they're not evil characters, so it's not a sort of demonisation of the English in India, but really just about the difference between the city and the town, and the village, rather.
Okay, let's just talk a little bit more about the plot. I mean, you said that you didn't want to make it specifically Asian. The show opens with the convict who's of African heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a history which we kind of learn in the course of the story, you know. And, of course, Estella is also African.
Yes.
From the kind of logistical thing, because your drama is very rooted in the realism of sort of India of the 1860s.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make that logic work?
Well, it's actually, as usual, I'm always interested in diaspora, in terms of who's where and who was around and what different cultures were around. And, of course, in the days of the empire, people were, like, going all over the world. So although you had African slaves up until, I think it was 1840s, when they abolished slavery in England, you did actually have a lot of Africans who were being transported as servants to India and China, as sailors, as servants, whatever. And actually, when you look at the... when you research it, there's actually a huge amount of Africans that actually went to India, and there's a whole tribe of them as well somewhere in Gujarat.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it'd be quite an interesting way of looking at the fact that we're not just all these little sort of, you know, countries where it's only one culture, that there were Africans in India, and that they actually went as far as China even. And of course, the more I looked into it, I thought, yeah, why not? Why does it all have to be Indian versus English? Why not have an African running around in India? And quite a lot of people said to me, were there Africans in India at the time? And then I would produce all these documents and go, yes, there were, look.
Yes.
So it was very exciting to be able to make Magwitch African, make him South African, in fact, or at the time it was from the Cape Colony, or what is now Cape Town. And of course I got carried away with it all, and then got Robben Island in there as well. And the fact at the time, a lot of Indian political...
you mean Andaman Island?
No, I'm just talking about the adaptation.
Yeah.
I actually had a whole story, a backstory about Magwitch, who he ended up in Robben Island.
Oh,
Robben Island at the time was an island for convicts and lepers. And of course, when it came to the actual day of rehearsals, those sort of details had to go, because otherwise it would have, the play would have gone on for 3 days.
So
that kind of detail had to go. But there was a lot of research that I'd done on the sort of Africans that were in India at the time.
So just to give your characters a backstory.
Yes, yeah. You can get too carried away with the backstory, and then, you know, it's too much.
And also, did you sort of dispense with some original characters from the Dickens story in order to make it work?
Lots of characters had to go. I mean, in the original, there's, you know, in Pip's original village in the marshes of Kent, there's a whole load of, you know, characters. Like, there's a woman called Mrs. Wopsle, and there's Pumblechook, who's still in there. But there were lots of other characters, but we couldn't possibly have them all in. So I think the... There's also another subplot with because the original blacksmith, as he was in the book, Joe Gargery.
Yes.
His apprentice is called Orlick, and Orlick is involved in all sorts of nastiness in the novel, and he's the one that, in fact, beats up Mrs. Gargery and disables her, but had to get rid of him. So quite a lot of those kind of Mrs. Wopsles and Orlicks had to go in order to sort of get to the nub of the story.
And, I mean, in the book also, it's very descriptive, you know, Pip's feelings or the kind of atmosphere around and everything like that. But in the play, it's a very different thing, because I'm assuming the director, along with the composer and the designer, would sort of add all the layers to it.
Yeah, so you don't need to actually describe it. You can see it, show, don't tell, as they always say in theatre. So there's a lot of that, sort of the boyish childhood of Pip in the village is very important. So we see him playing and running and jumping, and, you know, just his kind of physicality is very important. And you can do that theatrically quite easily.
Yeah.
But all that stuff around Pip, sort of feeling that he doesn't belong, that he wants to do something more with his life, that he wants to get away from the filth of the manual labour that he's been, you know, that's been meted out to him. That's still there in the play, in the adaptation, but not as you know, obviously not as descriptive, because you can't have these huge long tracts of description
Like, did you were you and the director and the designer, like, you know, as a writer, how much are you involved in the rest of the process of creativity in theatre when you're making a piece of theatre?
Basically, as a writer, you're in rehearsals. Usually what happens is, for the first 2 weeks, you go in and you cut and you add, or, you know, once the actor starts speaking the lines, you suddenly think, oh, actually, that doesn't work, or it doesn't sound right, or there's too much. So I think a lot of what I was doing in rehearsals at the beginning was cutting. And then you have to just let them get on with it, go away as the writer, because otherwise you just get in the way. Just watching people doing the same scene again and again can get a little bit dull as the writer.
Right.
So then you come back after a couple of weeks and then see what, you know, whilst they're running it. And I think with the design, it's usually more a sort of director-designer partnership. So the director and the designer work quite closely together. And I work quite closely with the director, but I don't necessarily always work with the designer.
I see. Of course, one other interesting thing in your adaptation is that you've kind of put in what I might call revolutionary bits in inverted commas. Like you have the character of Biddy saying to Pip that, you know, he should be reading some writers from Bengal alongside trying to read Keats and Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Then you have a character of Man
played
by Shiv,
you
know, Shiv Garewal, also talking about sort of revolution in some way. I mean, how did you kind of interweave that into a Dickensian story?
Well, the big thing is that it's set in 1861, which is when Dickens wrote it. I mean, when Dickens wrote the novel, he actually set it in 1804.
Right.
Or 1801, I can't quite remember, but it was at the beginning, it was before the Industrial Revolution. So I thought it'd be quite interesting to set it in 1861 because it's post revolution, Indian Revolution, or what is known as the Indian Mutiny, and it's when the British Raj comes into being. So it goes from the East India Company to the Queen. So India is now, in this adaptation, India is now being ruled by the English, and so you can't really ignore that. I felt that I couldn't, you know, if I was going to set it in 1861, I had to have something in there. And of course, it's pre-Gandhi and pre-Nehru and real sort of
Indian National Congress.
But there are the stirrings of it, obviously, because you've had 1857. So really, it was just a little taster of things. And for me, you know, obviously, because I'm Bengali and my family from Calcutta, I know Calcutta really well. And that was the time when the first Indian college was set up in Calcutta, the Presidency College, which I think is known as the first college for Hindus, as they call it, but it's actually for all Indians. And the College Street, which is where I've put Pip in the play, is very much where all that kind of stuff still goes on. You still see people standing up making big speeches, a bit like Hyde Park Corner, where people just suddenly stand up on soapboxes and start making speeches. That has not changed in all those years. That still happens. And even when I went back to Calcutta last year, I saw demonstrations. Was it child labourers were like having some sort of demonstration walking through the streets? So it's a very politically charged city, and it was at the time the headquarters of the British Raj. So it was impossible not to put something in. And I was quite interested in the idea that a lot of the Indian nationalists who came later, like Nehru, like Gandhi, were actually educated in Britain. So you have both Jinnah of Pakistan and Nehru both studying at the bar in London, much later, 30 years later. But I thought, for me, I thought Pip could represent someone like that. So they are educated by the English, but this education somehow or other stirs up some nationalist pride. Which is kind of not quite what the English expected to achieve, but that's what they did achieve. So really, it's just a little taster.
But you've got more aspirations from Pip than perhaps Dickens might have had from his character in that sense.
I don't know. He has quite a lot of aspirations for Pip. Oh, I see. You
in the kind of rebel, slightly political, a bit more of a political animal.
Yeah, well, why not? You know. Why not? It's an adaptation.
Right. Also, one of the interesting things in the adaptation was the fact that all the actors and even Pip, who's played by an actor called Tariq Jordan, they keep what you might call a natural accent.
Mm.
And Pip has got a very northern accent, or the actor who plays him has, and likewise the Joe Gargery character and all that. And everybody else speaks in their natural voice.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, was that a kind of straight artistic decision to keep that, or was there an attempt to try and see if they might have had a different way of speaking, as it were.
Yeah, well, we talked about this quite a lot with the director. I mean, I personally, I've always had a slight dislike of Indian accents. It's a bit like those old Second World War films where you have all the German characters have these cod German accents. And for some reason, whenever we do Indian plays or plays with an Indian sensibility, we always put on these Indian accents, and they all, to me, they sound like this, they sound like buddy, 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 ding, ding. And they just feel kind of slightly Peter Sellerisk, because most of the Asian actors here are mimicking their parents. So they immediately age up by about 30 years, and everybody's accents are different. Some actors can't do Indian accents, not very well. And It's interesting that whenever we do Chekhov here, we don't put Russian accents on. Mm-hmm. When we do Italian plays, we seem to put Italian accents on. So there's a kind of weird thing where there's this supposition that if we do anything with an Indian theme, they have to all have Indian accents. And Nikolai and I spoke about this quite a lot, and really we were saying, well, if they were in real life, these people would be speaking in Bengali, they would not be speaking in English. So what we need to do is differentiate their accents from what is happening in Calcutta. So basically we just go from North Britain to RP. So when Pip goes to Calcutta, he becomes much more RP. And it sort of works. For me, it works. And I know that some people have found that difficult. And what was fascinating was when we held auditions, most of the actors that came into audition, they automatically put on an Indian accent. And I always said, no, we're not, you know, Nikolai was saying, we're not doing it with accents, we're just doing it with your own accent. And they go, oh, okay. And then they do the whole thing again in an Indian accent. And it is this thing where people have been incredibly conditioned to do these things in Indian accents. It was a different take. We were trying something new.
Yeah, I must say, it felt a bit strange initially, you know, but then I sort of got into the whole thing of the speak, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was the two characters in the village, at least Pip and Joe, they have slightly northern kind of accents, yeah. You know? Yeah. But,
well, they're all supposed to have northern accents.
Right, okay. Well, I didn't notice it among the others, but, you know.
All the people in the village have northern accents. I think they were specifically from Leeds, I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Can't remember, but certainly when the dialect coach came in, that's what we were doing.
Oh, they did have a dialect coach then.
Yes. To work in a Leeds accent.
Okay. So it's very interesting because all the scenes are very quick scenes. It's very cinematic in style, isn't it?
Yeah. I think there were something like 30 different scenes. I mean, they're quite... And I think partly that's because the book is so vast. Uh-huh. The story is so vast. And it was just a way of trying to tell the story in a very quick way, but in a slightly less... I didn't want to get bogged down with these very long scenes that often you get in theatre. I mean, generally I'm used to writing scenes that are like 10 to 15 pages long, whereas here we were having scenes that were about 3 or 4 pages long. So we're going very... I mean, Pip goes from 12 years old in the play to about 25.
Yeah.
So that's quite a big... and he goes through a lot.
Yeah, you have to cover about 12 years.
And lots and lots of different characters. I mean, of course, you've got Miss Havisham in there as well. So,
yes, definitely. Yeah, no, I enjoyed the music as well,
yes.
And the kind of overall look of the thing. You know, it's a very enjoyable show. And it's kind of completely whizzes through every time, you know. So now it's touring, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and do you have a relationship with the English Touring Theatre? Because they are the company that's touring it. Have you worked with them before?
I've met with them for this production, yes. This is the first time I've met them.
I see, okay.
So, yeah, no, I should go and see it in some of the theatres.
Where a tour is happening.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, now, just to sort of talk a bit more generally about your work, you know, you're quite a controversial writer and outspoken in that sense, isn't it, in terms of your approach to theatre and work. I've heard you say lots of things like you don't want to be pigeonholed
yes,
as an Asian playwright, yet you end up doing a lot more intercultural work than, say, you might normally wish to. How does all that work in terms of your own...
I don't particularly feel outspoken. I just feel like, you know, I just want to do whatever I feel like doing from one minute to the next. I don't like to be pigeonholed, but then equally I think, well, if I want to do an Indian adaptation of Great Expectations, why not? I think that the big problem with theatre at the moment is that we're supposed to do... Well, I think it happens in telly as well, actually, where we're supposed to do one or the other. We're supposed to either do Indian or black or white, but you can't have it all together. It confuses people sometimes. Not necessarily audiences, but critics, certainly. And I think that's kind of slightly, for me, frustrating. And I think probably I'm slightly obsessed with wanting to do something quite truly multicultural, because that's my background, because I'm married to an English man and I have mixed-race kids. And apart from the stuff done by Hanif Qureshi and also, of course, Ayub with East is East, there's very little reflection of that world for me on the stage or in the media, in film, generally, so. You know, and it's all white, or it's all Asian, or it's like the Cosby Show, you know, it's like, why can't we actually reflect the world that we live in? So that's what I'm more interested, rather than, you know, doing Indian accents with great expectations and everyone being in India. So, yeah. In that sense, I suppose I am controversial.
Well, or outspoken, one could say, really. You know. Yeah, but does it help people change their perceptions of you, or does it sort of make you come across like, oh my God, that woman, you know?
I don't know, you tell me.
Well, I don't know. I'm asking it from the point of view of people who may, you know, want to commission work and that kind of stuff, rather than, I mean, you know, just now in the last couple of days, we've had a little controversy about Midsummer Murders. You must have heard
yes,
of that.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Where the producer is saying that he doesn't want to have any ethnic minorities in the programme because he wants to retain it as a last bastion of Englishness,
yes,
and
yeah.
whatever that means, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because there were no people of colour in the 1960s, apparently, according to him.
But I think it's set in contemporary times, but maybe there aren't any in the village.
I'm confused by that programme. I've not really watched it, so I don't really know what he's talking about.
But yeah, it's a debate about the whole thing, about whether, you know, whether you should have mixed race actors, I guess, or I mean mixed casting
yeah.
in television to a certain degree. It's kind of raised its head about that whole question.
Yeah.
Or even writers.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like you writing an episode of Midsummer Murders. And
obviously for me, you know, all that kind of debate is incredibly racist. I mean, you just think, well, what do they want? You know, if they're saying they just want English people in this programme, we might as well just go and grow onions, because actually it's a multicultural society and they should be employing writers to write for a white show as well as, you know, Asian or black actors to be in it. And from what I understand, the person who made those comments has been removed from the show.
Well, for the moment, ITV investigates it.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah.
that show has been running for 14
I
years
know,
and
I
nobody's
know.
Noticed, as
yeah,
it were, until
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Until he brought it up himself, as it were, you know.
Very strange.
Yes. Well, it's interesting. But I guess it must be frustrating to a certain degree, because you've got a theatre career that spans at least about coming up to 20 years, and sometimes you feel that you're kind of having to confront the same argument over and over again, instead of being able to develop in terms of your own ability
yeah.
and your craft, or in terms of the kind of things that you want to talk about, really.
I think I don't feel so bad about it now. I mean, I remember a few years ago I used to get quite het up about the fact that I was always classified as an Asian writer, and that used to make me feel quite cross, because you would not call Simon Stevens an English writer. You would call him a writer. So that really was, or you know, for women, you wouldn't call them, you know, they often say the woman playwright or the female playwright, but you know, you wouldn't call Harold Pinter a male playwright, a male English playwright. So it's just really about being taken on equal terms. But then on the other hand, what you do see is you get audiences who are very diverse coming to see the shows. So for example, Great Expectations on the last night, there was a whole group of Asian families, you know, with little kids there, as well as elderly white people, as well as, you know, your normal sort of, you know, mixed race punters. And to me that was really exciting, that it's not just a homogenous group of people who come to see the show, but everybody has something to gain from it. And also, as a writer, you can make all sorts of assumptions about your audience, and then you'll have a little white old lady who'll come up to you afterwards and tell you how she was brought up in India and how exciting she felt, how excited she felt to sort of watch this show, and how it took her back. So that all that stuff is really great, and I just wish that there was more of that diversity in marketing and in you know, productions. And we'll get there eventually, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to see if the audiences for English touring theatre kind of respond to this thing, because it must be quite a challenging piece from their point of view as
yes,
well,
yeah,
you know, because
sure.
it's probably very different work to what the company normally
yes,
does.
Yes, I'm sure. I mean, I know it's going to places like Malvern, which I think aren't particularly multicultural, so we'll see how it goes on there.
Yes.
But it's going to Brighton and it's going to Cambridge, and I'm sure it'll get quite a diverse audience.
But as a writer, how do you work yourself? I mean, writing is a very solitary activity. What do you do? Do you, like, get up every morning and you think, I've got an idea, I must do this as a play, I've got to go and see if I can speak to a theatre about this?
The great thing about writing theatre is it's not as solitary as writing a novel is.
I see, okay.
So you have to write on your own for a while, and then eventually you get into a room with a bunch of actors and a director, which is much more exciting. But generally I'm commissioned to write plays. So, for example, the next thing I'm doing is a rather strange project with an aerialist from Brighton.
Oh.
And she's an Iranian Parsi, and she wanted me to write a script for her. And she does this show on what they call a Circe, which is like it's basically a round hoop. And so I've written a show about Alzheimer's, and it's got some British Council funding. We're going to India with it. And the bizarre thing was that last time I was in India, I got called up by the very famous actor Nasiruddin Shah, who called me in and said, I'd like to do this show. And I said, you know, it's on a hoop, you know, in the air. And he said, yeah, why not? I'm taking hang gliding lessons. I thought, gosh, these actors. But so it seems to have appealed to quite a lot of people, although it's completely different. And then, so I'm working with a Glaswegian director on this and this aerialist. And we, as a writer, you write the script, then you meet up, you discuss what you've written, and you try and incorporate everybody's notes. And also, the aerialist will say, actually, I can't do this scene because I need this, or that. And then I have to rewrite it accordingly. So you're kind of almost writing to order, but with a sort of slightly different vision from a straightforward play.
Who's the person, the aerialist?
Her name is Philippa Vafadri. And she's with this company called Bandabazi. And so they're basically like a sort of workshopping circus aerialist organisation that work with refugees and training and stuff. And it's fantastic. I mean, I went and literally went to a hangar with them and watched them doing their, you know, doing their acrobats and stuff, and it was just incredible. Little kids about 8 years old doing it as well.
So will we see it in the UK?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's going to go on a little tour. I think it goes to Brighton, and I think it goes to Waterman's as well, so...
Right.
I mean, at the moment, there are so many cuts that all the theatres that have been booked for the tour, about four of them have just gone down. So,
oh, gosh.
So, you know, it's that thing where we're not quite sure where it's going at the moment, but it's...
So how do you think the cuts will affect?
The cuts will affect us hugely, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, if you think that, you know, a small company like Bandabazi, who've got a tour booked, and then four theatres say, we can't have you because we've just gone under, that's disastrous, isn't it? So, yes, no, it's going to affect us all. And certainly new writing is not being as... there's not as many commissions going around, there's a lot more...
And of course, so you work also in radio and television, and similar things are happening in that.
Yeah,
arena.
No, I just heard yesterday they've just cut an entire slot on Radio 4, which was the Friday evening play.
The drama slot.
Yeah, drama slot, which was the only play, the only show that they did after the Watershed time. So they used to do quite hard hitting drama in the, you know, on radio. So that's gone. So it's all sort of afternoon plays or Woman's Hour or adaptations, that sort of thing, which is a real shame, actually.
So I read somewhere that you're doing something with the RSE. You were talking about something around women's playwriting for their 50th birthday or something.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a play for them next year. So I've written a play that they say they're going to produce next year, and I'm also doing I'm curating a weekend of plays. So they're celebrating 50 years. I think they produced something like 200 new plays in the last 50 years. And so I think Mark Ravenhill is doing one weekend and I'm doing the other. And so I asked them, just out of interest, how many of these 200 are written by women? And they said 11. So I said, well, should we try and do a weekend of writing by women that you produce then? So I've been reading all the scripts that they produced at the RSC.
You mean over the 50 years that they've been in existence, they've had 200 plays produced, of which 11 have been by women?
Yeah.
And is this like historical plays from...
No. Just the new plays, the new playwriting that they do. This isn't Shakespeare. This is, So, for example, David Edgar, David Hare, all these people have written plays for the RSC. But there have been amazing women writers as well that have written for them, like Sylvia Plath, Tim Blake Wurtenbaker, April De Angelis, Carol Churchill. You know, so these are great playwrights who have written for the RSC, but only 11.
Well, that sounds interesting.
So I thought, well, we better do that then, hadn't we? So I'm doing two readings. Mm-hmm. We haven't decided yet which ones. And then we're going to have a little discussion on the Sunday, I think, some sort of presentation of work. Or...
And this is later in the year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in August, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, great. Well, Tanika Gupta, thank you very much for talking to Theatre Voice.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again in the future.
Yeah, great.